the affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
And again,
in creating the kind of world order that I think all of us would like to see.
And again,
a new order of the ages.
And again,
we needed a new world order.
And again,
a new world order.
And again,
a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions and the rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened, and some have to be changed. So we have to do what we do best. We have to lead. We have to lead. We have to update the global rules of the road. We have to do it in a way that maximizes benefits for everyone, because obviously it's overwhelmingly in our interest. This is not a zero-sum game. It's overwhelmingly in our interest that China prosper, that Mongolia prosper, that nations big and large, east and west. We have to level the playing field so that American companies and workers can compete in the world, that the competition is fair and it's healthy. To the first point, we came into office facing the worst financial recession since the Great Depression. We had to unfreeze the credit markets, reform the financial system, inject demand back into the economy. And while this agenda is far from complete, we've made significant progress with all of your help. The economy has now added private sector jobs every month, disappointing this month, but they nonetheless added jobs. Even so, we've still found that the time there's a need for an ambitious affirmative agenda. We strengthened and signed three free trade agreements. I know I'm referred to in the White House as the White House optimist. Now, I read that all the time. Well, it's like I'm the new guy. As my grandfather would say, like I just fell off a turnip truck yesterday. In case you haven't noticed, I've been there longer than any of them. And I hope you all haven't noticed that, but I'm afraid it's self-evident. But I'm optimistic, not out of naivete. I know the history of the journey of this country. History of the journey of this country is every single challenge. We've unleashed the American people and all of you.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
If you're a parent, chances are you know all about the spooky truth books, with subjects ranging from shadowy fraternal organizations to mind-controlling TV shows. Kids can't get enough of this series of short, scary children's novels.
And spooky truth author K.L. Graves is joining us this morning to talk about his latest book, Night of the Brainwashed Babysitter. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Now, my kids just love these books. Tell us about this new one.
Well, sure, I'd love to. It picks up right at the end of the last book, where Henry's parents just left, and his babysitter, Kelly, starts acting creepy and a little strange.
Sounds scary.
Yes. If you scratch beneath the surface, Jim, you'll see that the reason Kelly turns evil is because her mind is being twisted by subliminal messages that she is receiving through the news.
Oh, I'm hooked already.
And the question is, will Henry be able to rescue his brother and sister from the secret society of Illuminati scumbags who are really pulling the strings?
No spoilers.
Now, in just 4 years, you put out 25 books. It came from Tower 7, Curse of the Chemtrails, The Zionist Who Cried Holocaust. Tell me, where do you come up with all these spooky ideas?
Now, I find, and I tell this to kids all the time, that if you look close enough, the spooky truth is everywhere. And once you see it, you can't stop seeing it. It's all around you. Everything's connected.
So what you're saying is that a lot of your stories are related to real life.
That's what makes them spooky.
Now, this stuff has really been catching on. Over 40 million copies sold. So many bestsellers out there.
I've been thrilled. Before this series, I was self-publishing pamphlets and handing them out on the train. Now I get emails from teachers and parents all the time telling me that my books are all their kids can talk about.
Oh, well, it's true. My son used to hate to read. Now he's holed up in the basement with these spooky truth books all day and night. Says he never watches TV, doesn't even want tap water anymore. He just loves reading so much.
You know, my message to kids is that pulling the curtain back on what the government doesn't want us to know can be fun.
Well, it is certainly working. We hear stories all the time of kids decorating their rooms with plots and characters from the stories. There's even a growing fan base, as you well know, on the internet who call themselves the Spooky Truthers, and they talk all day long about your storylines on their message boards.
Well, some fans have sent him some questions. Let's have a look.
Hey, my name's Aaron, and my question is, what is your favorite spooky truth book?
That's a tough question. I think I'd have to go with The Secret of the Bohemian Grove, which is about how the richest Republicans use a giant owl statue to pick the next president.
Wow.
Yeah, I really had fun writing that one.
Hi, I'm Sophia, and I'm from Arizona.
Oof, spooky truth, lots of gulags in the Southwest.
Really?
Look it up.
I was wondering, what advice do you have for someone who wants to be a writer?
Well, write what you know. Mm-hmm. And I always say, drop out of school. They're just filling your head with lies.
Wow.
I like the books a lot. Sometimes I stay up the whole night reading. Is there really a president that tried to assassinate over 60 people?
President Clinton.
Whoa.
62 execution warrants. It's a fact.
Well, parents and kids at home, you're lucky because K.L. Graves is going to give us a sneak peek of the new book he's working on right now called My Teacher is a Zombie When It Comes to Trusting the Media.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Lauren was scared. She had never been called in for detention at her old school. She could hear Miss Casey's footsteps coming closer, and her heart started racing. She knew the Jews were building mass graves for the New World Order. She knew the president was a descendant of the lizards from the Draco constellation. But why did Miss Casey get so angry when Lauren told her class about it? Unless the teacher was herself a lizard woman. And now, Miss Casey was getting even closer.
Thanks to K.L. Graves for joining us today.
Oh.
The Spooky Truth books are available at bookstores and libraries everywhere.
Yeah, don't use the libraries. They track what you read.
If your limbs begin dissolving in the water that you tread, all surroundings are evolving in the stream that clears your head. Find yourself a caravan like Noah must have led. 4 and 20 birds of Maya baked into an atom you, polarized into existence magnet heart from red to blue, to such extent the realm of dark within the picture it seems true. All your lightning waits inside you, travel it along your spine, 7 stars receive your visit, 7 seals remain divine. 7 churches filled with spirit, treasure from the angel's mind. The space you make has your own laws, no longer human gods or cause. The center of this house will never die. One-eyed men aren't really reigning, they just march in place until 2-eyed men with mystery training finally feel the power fill. 3-eyed men are not complaining, they can yo-yo where they will. They slip inside this house as they pass by.
This is Bob Considine continuing our report on the American family. In this half hour, we look at the teenager in our families, with our emphasis on such questions as, do we keep our young people young long enough, or do we keep them young and irresponsible for too many years? Do we force them into a kind of mating dance before they're ready for it? Is the dating pattern of the teenage years a sensible one? Of course, everybody has ideas about teenagers, but playwright Abe Burrows is one who looks at teenagers with a particularly understanding eye.
It's a banal thing to say, but they're pretty good, kids I know. There are some tough problems here, and I believe that they are more impatient than the youth of the past. They don't have value until they're grown. You see, a son or a daughter used to be a very valuable piece of property. I use that word not to sound cold. But you had a farm, a son worked with you. If from the time he was seven, time he could, he helped, he milked, he did various things. And he was a valuable thing. Today, because of this urbanization of our civilization and the fact that, as I say, a daughter doesn't even have to help a mother in the kitchen except to unfreeze the peas, you know? So the kids, I think, feel they have no value. They feel unnecessary. They're somewhat like household pets until they can take their place in the world. And I believe this causes a kind of frustration and a desire to almost overthrow the adult regime or get in there fast. And I think most of the violence and unhappiness of youngsters comes from that. We're delaying them too long. There's no place for nothing for them to do, really. We have child labor laws, which are sound because children were put into coal mines and things like that. But at the same time, kids have no real use in our culture today. They really don't. And they feel it, I think. And we have to love them for themselves. And we can't say, well, thank goodness I got five sons, by George, I can have buy 3 more acres or 10 more acres or 100 more acres and they'll help me farm them. Because we don't have that. So I don't know the answer to finding use for kids, but I do think that's the question, that's the problem.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the households, then we start making better investments.
About this, if you're a parent packing your kids' lunch this morning. Kids at Coelho Middle School in Attleboro were forced to throw out their lunch trays full of perfectly good food and go hungry the rest of the day yesterday. Now, it's all because the parents owed the cafeteria money. But parents we spoke with said they had no idea they were behind on their payments and they were never notified about it in advance. Apparently, cafeteria workers employed by Whitson Foods were fed up with kids who owed money, so they forced them to throw their lunches away when they got to the cashier, even if they were as little as a dollar short. These students say they were singled out, embarrassed right in front of their peers. Their parents are outraged because their kids were not even offered a cold cheese sandwich, which is normally what happens in this situation.
Never had an issue until this, but that was enough to piss me off.
They apologized for the actions. Their intent was not to humiliate or upset the students, which I stated to them that they had done.
Just heard from a father, and then right here, the principal of the school, Andrew Bowles. He says he's appalled by what happened. The school is now looking into ways to make paying balances more convenient for families, but he says the bottom line is no child should be turned away from the lunch line.
They're forming in a straight line. They're going through a tight wind. And the kids are losing their minds. The blitzkrieg bop. They're piling in the backseat. They're generating steam heat. And pulsating to the backbeat of the blitzkrieg bop.
Hate crimes against cultural groups like goths or punks are to be recorded by a police force for the first time in Britain. They'll be considered in the same way as racist or homophobic attacks. The BBC's John Brain has this report.
Sophie Lancaster was described by her family as a kind, sensitive, intelligent young woman. But she died after being brutally attacked in a local park. Targeted, along with her boyfriend Robert Maltby, purely because they were goths. From today, Greater Manchester Police, which carried out the investigation into Sophie's murder, will classify any attacks on goths as a hate crime. Until now, the definition of hate crime has been restricted to factors such as religion, sexual orientation, and disability. The Manchester Force is the first to add so-called alternative subcultures to the list. As well as goths, the new policy will include punks, metalers and emos. Under the law, those who carry out hate crime-related violence can receive stiffer sentences. However, that still won't apply to attacks on goths and other alternative cultures, as it would require new legislation. But Greater Manchester Police believe their new approach will, at least, raise awareness of the issue.
Hey, let's go. Shoot them in the back now.
Judge rules the two fifth grade boys will stand trial accused of a plot to murder classmates at Colville Elementary School last month.
So I asked him if, like, you really were going to do this? Are you sure? Were you really going to kill her? And he said that, yes, he was.
The ruling came after testimony from 9 witnesses. Now, state law says that kids have to be at least 12 years old to be held legally accountable, but these boys are 10 and 11. They brought a knife, a gun, and ammunition to school.
He pulled out the gun and showed me, and I was very shocked. And I said, well, is there anything else? You know, and I unzipped another pocket, and I pulled out the clip, and I went, ugh.
The boys pleaded not guilty to conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, among other charges.
Hey, let's go. Shoot them in the back now. And what they want, I don't know. Oh, all revved up.
The case of a nude picture involving a Metro middle school student is raising a new awareness about the problem. Here are the startling numbers. Studies show 1 in 5 teens has participated in what's called sexting. KNBC9's Haley Harrison is live with what happened. Haley?
Well, that semi-nude photo was reportedly taken by a girl who was in the 8th grade, then sent to a boy who was a freshman in high school. She thought it was for his eyes only, but it instead ended up on the internet. In a flash, a teenage mistake can go viral. That's what happened to a North Kansas City middle school student who reportedly sent a semi-nude photo of herself to a high school boy. He posted the image online. When administrators at Newmark Middle School found out about what was going on outside of school hours, they called the girl's parents.
He just got a cell phone, so I guess obviously hearing this, that's a conversation we will be having.
Shannon Johnson's 6th grade son just got a cell phone last month.
It was a stipulation when we bought it for him that mom and dad will monitor and read everything, and if you don't like it, then you don't get it.
No police report has been filed on the incident involving the two teens here. Police say minors who take explicit photos of themselves are manufacturing child pornography.
They are forming in a straight line and going through the tight wind. And the kids are losing their minds. The blitzkrieg bop. They're piling in the backseat. They're generating steam heat and pulsating to the backbeat of the blitzkrieg pop. Hey, let's go. The Blitzkrieg Bob. The Blitzkrieg Bob. The Blitzkrieg Bob.
Yeah, brace yourselves, everyone.
Raise those eyebrows now.
She's back.
Not to get ahead of ourselves, but frankly, who are we kidding? Okay, looks like we're leading with Hillary again here.
Look out, lady!
The Beltway is just buzzing.
Shorter hair, didn't have the glasses.
Hillary Clinton had so much celebrity, the aura.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
in case you've forgotten, it's been 147 days since the last presidential election, and a scant 1,315 days until Election Day 2016.
Tea leaves here.
All kinds of speculation.
And everyone is whispering, not really whispering as much anymore.
A preview of 2016.
Glimpses into the political crystal ball.
It's never too early.
Big time 2016 buzz.
I am not mature enough to be able to let Hillary and Biden walk into the same room and not talk 2016.
Down.
We're political junkies. We want to talk about the next election. It's probably ridiculous, but it's what we enjoy doing.
What do you think?
Yeah, anything's possible, right?
People are going to be angry that we're talking about it so far in advance, but...
I love the speculation. I love the tea leaf reading.
Fair or not fair, good thing or bad thing, it's a thing.
Until she says no, absolutely no, the answer could always be yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Boom. Okay.
No,
did
nothing?
We solve that?
We've got two and a half years of talking like this.
It's exciting. Thank goodness.
It hasn't been a perfect day, but every day isn't perfect.
So I don't care how early it is. What the heck, man? We're just junkies.
That was good.
Yeah.
Very peppy.
I need a shower.
Hi, I'm Cornelius Gruppe. I'm a neurologist and senior research chemist here at Sleep Thinker. Did you ever notice how many stupid people surround you? If you didn't, then you might be one of them, in which case you can turn off this video and carry on with your life. It's no secret that morons and idiots are the majority of the world's population. They're not suddenly going to get smarter or start acting reasonably. It's you who will have to change. You're in the minority. We have developed a pill, which, depending upon active ingredient concentration, can reduce a person's IQ permanently. We have minus 10, minus 30, and the strongest minus 50. But why should I consider lowering it, you might ask? Because life is easier. And the world is a much happier place when you're dumb. Wouldn't you like that? We recommend lowering your IQ to around 70. But don't worry, with an IQ of 70, you can still tie your shoelaces and write an average rap song. Simply speaking, the pill softens your mind, but it still needs to be reprogrammed. So after taking the pill, you spend the rest of the day in your room listening to Lil Wayne and Pitbull music, also reading The Sun and watching MTV. You then take a nice hot bath, go to sleep, and in the morning, you wake up dumber than you were the day before. Self-awareness, decency, lack of confidence, even fear will cease to exist. Jump off the roof, drive drunk, set your own flatulence on fire. All of these meaningless and dangerous activities that you never tried will become very enjoyable and fun. Now, unfortunately, there is one side effect that I must mention. All those people that you had no concern about will suddenly start to annoy you. People of other races, other sexual orientation, people with more money, basically anyone different from you. But the good thing is that you won't have to hate them on your own. You'll make plenty of like-minded friends because you'll be in the majority. So think about it. The world's a much brighter place when you're not too bright for it. To find out more information about Minus IQ, visit our company's website at www.sleepthinker.com.
The great evil, in my humble opinion, which haunts our enterprise, and I say this realizing I'm setting the fox among the chickens, the great evil that has been allowed to flourish in the absence of mathematical understanding is relativism. And what is relativism? It's the idea that there is no distinction between fish and Shinola. That all ideas are somehow operating on equal footing. So one person is a chaos theorist, another is a follower of the revelations of this or that New Age guru, someone else is channeling information from the Pleiades, and we have been taught that political correctness demands that we treat all these things with equal weight. because we have no mathematical ability, no logical ability, we don't know how to ask the questions that expose some positions as preposterous, trivial, insulting to the intelligence, and unworthy of repetition. So we all are very comfortable bashing science and flailing away at that, but that isn't our enemy. Science is capable of undertaking its own reformation and critique and has been engaged in that fairly vigorously for some time. The enemy that will really subvert the enterprise of building a world based on clarity is the belief that we cannot point out the pernicious forms of idiocy that flourish in our own community. And this problem is growing worse all the time. I mean, just pick up a copy of Magical Blend or Shaman's Drum, and you will discover an appeal to the level of intellect that makes what's going on with television advertising look like a meeting of the Princeton Institute of Advanced Study. We have tolerated too many loose heads in our community. We are not willing to take on the karma involved in argument and discourse that actually gores somebody's ox. So that at the end of the day, iridology or Mormonism or some other form of institutionally supported foolishness lies in shreds on the floor. We consider this politically incorrect. I can feel the tension in this room because people sense I might gore their particular ox. If we had learned mathematical logic or reason or rules of evidence, when someone approaches us excited to inform us that the ruins of Lemuria have been spotted in the deep sea off Big Sur or something like that, we would be able to respond to that with the contempt it deserves. I had a conversation about this recently with someone who, if I had to describe their job category, I would describe them as mafiosa. And I said, what do you think of the abduction phenomenon? And without hesitation, this person said, there are just so many foolish people in the world. And to me, all of these things are intelligence tests. And the people who pass the intelligence test are not worrying about pro bono proctologists from other star systems unannounced in their bedrooms. So, you know, we have perfected politeness. We have perfected the ability to listen to damn foolishness without betraying by so much as the flick of an eyebrow that we realize what we're in the presence in of. Now I think it's time to refine our mathematical skills, learn to think straight, and not be afraid to denounce the pernicious forms of foolishness which are vitiating the energies of our community and making us appear marginal and absurd in the discourse about truly transforming society.
All my point is there's a lot of ways to look at the world. You know what I'm saying? Why pick the way you learn over TV? Because it's usually wrong. You ever see a good drug story on the news? Never. News is supposed to be objective, isn't it? It's supposed to be the news. But every drug story is negative. Well, hold it. I've had some killer fucking times on drugs. Let's hear the whole story. Same LSD story every time, and we've all heard it. Young man on acid, thought he could fly, jumped out of a building. What a tragedy. What a dick. He thought he could fly. Why didn't he take off the ground and check it out first? You don't see ducks lined up to catch elevators to fly south. He's an idiot. He's dead. Good. mean, there's one less moron in the world? Wow, what a fucking tragedy, huh? I guess I'm one car length up in traffic tomorrow. How about a positive LSD story? That would be newsworthy, don't you think? Anybody think that just once to hear a positive LSD story? Today, a young man on acid realized that all matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration, that we are all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There is no such thing as death. Life is only a dream, and we are the imagination of ourselves. Here's Tom with the weather.
If you were out and about in Pennington last night or this morning, you probably couldn't help but notice that it's windy as a bastard out there. We've gotten reports of garbage cans being blown clear across the goddamn street in the Poinsettia District, storm windows rattling around loud as shit by the dirty old canal, and it generally just being windier than a son of a bitch throughout Pennington. We have an email from one of our WONN5 junior weather watchers. Margaret writes, "It's windy as balls. You can hardly get down the frickin' street without walking backwards like a dick and getting all out of breath." Thanks, Margaret. And now your future fivecast for today. You can expect clouds with a high of just 43 degrees, which probably still isn't cold enough to stop that weird Fredericks kid from wearing shorts. A cold front will bring the wind chill to just above freezing this afternoon around 3, right around the time the Fredericks boy will walk down to the gas station in his knee-length shorts and just sit there watching people pump gas. Okay, looking at the 10-day, we're in for quite a bit more rain, and we all know what that means. The Pennington River is going to get really, really smelly. And about Wednesday, it looks like several unending days black as pitch and utterly without hope.
From Native American settlements to swanky suburbs, from fancy to fishy, time to step back into the Wayback Machine with Joel Nichols, thanks to the Johnson County Museum of History.
The Johnson County Museum of History. They say there's a lot to do in Johnson County. There's a lot to do in this building. This all began in about 1820. Look at these beautiful garments from the Shawnee tribe. Absolutely beautiful. And, of course, it needs a name. So Thomas Johnson, Reverend Thomas Johnson, he established the county. We could have been in Thomas County. The Civil War cut right through Johnson County. You can learn about John Brown here, Ellen Sugg, Jim Lane, and Bleeding Kansas. Johnson County bled too. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? No, this isn't Hee Haw. This is sort of a little house on the prairie where you and your kids can experience history. The food's not much. History's good. Of course, you can't talk about Johnson County without talking about the suburbs. J.C. Nichols had one vision, the estates of Mission Hills, but William Strang had another vision, the bungalows of Overland Park. Life in the suburbs wasn't all about tea parties and garden plots. There was a lot of controversy, too, about who can live where and who had the right to live where. Heroes like Robert Menele, Reverend Robert Menele, tried to answer this question. Suburbia for everyone? There's even a kidscape here with everything just right for kids to learn about theaters and bookstores and city hall and hospitals. It's great. Hospitals. You never know what you're going to learn at the Johnson County Museum of History or who you're going to learn about. Luther Taylor was a pitcher for the New York Giants. He was also a graduate of the Olathe School for the Deaf. Luther was deaf. That's how the hand signals between pitchers and catchers got started. One day, Luther was being kicked out of the game, so he went to the umpire and he was hand signaling all kinds of awful stuff. He didn't realize the ump's daughter also used hand signals. Luther was still kicked out of the game. Oh, you know what? You'll never know what you're going to learn here at the Johnson County Museum of History.
Good enough for Wichita.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Where it is, if you don't know the way, Kansas, follow me, 'cause I'm going
was supposed to be a fun family project turned into a frightening ordeal for one Kansas family. According to Adlin and Robert Hart of Leawood, Kansas, their home was raided by sheriff's deputies in search of an illegal marijuana grow last year. Deputies reportedly knocked on the family's door where the Harts and their two children live at 7:30 one morning last April, armed with assault rifles and wearing bulletproof vests. They then proceeded to search the home from top to bottom in search of the drugs. But they didn't find what they were looking for. Instead, they found a small indoor garden in the basement consisting of 3 tomato plants, 2 butternut squash plants, and 1 melon plant. Not exactly contraband. The Harts say they were likely targeted because they had purchased indoor or hydroponic growing supplies, which are commonly used for indoor marijuana grows. Used for vegetables, however, they're perfectly legal. Now, the family, which was reportedly told they had been under surveillance for months, wanted some answers as to why they were part of the sting and have filed a suit in Johnson County under the Kansas Open Records Act. Robert Hart told the Kansas City Star, "You can't send out the SWAT team because people are trying to grow tomatoes in their basement." And his wife, Adlin, speaking to the Associated Press, added, "If this can happen to us and we are educated and have reasonable resources, how does somebody who maybe hasn't led the perfect life supposed to be free in this country?"
Well, knowledge plus experience equals wisdom. Little and goes a whole long way. Well, excuses don't mean nothing where I come from, son. Just that you ain't learned from your mistakes. If you don't know the way, hands up.
Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, who built his reputation partly on his strong opposition to abortion, has signed 2 laws that tighten the state's abortion laws. One bans late-term abortions after 21 weeks due to fetal pain. KMBC9's Michael Mahoney looks into the debate over that issue. Michael?
At what point in its development can a fetus feel pain?
Babies from 20 weeks to full term feel pain more acutely than babies who are born and adults do.
Pope and others point to the work of a particular neonatal specialist who hints he's probably personally pro-choice, but in a Newsy.com report, Kanwaljeet Anand believes that there can be pain in the womb.
Science would be better served if we acknowledge this capability of conscious sensory perception in the human fetus.
Exclusive look tonight into a hidden community of transient and homeless people in Kansas City. We were there today as police went in to break up 3 of the group's campsites in northeast Kansas City, just off of Interstate 435. They found evidence of crime, children, and a secret network of below-ground tunnels. The site was destroyed today. Police spent the week warning residents about the eviction. KMBC9's Haley Harrison was with police as they inspected the campsite before today's sweep. One homeless outreach group says it is unlike anything they've ever seen before.
Walk into the secret corners of Kansas City, and a subterranean suburb emerges. Officer Jason Cooley's recently discovered this homeless camp.
See how this one kind of goes back and...
That's deep.
Uh-huh.
With caves and tunnels, the homeless have truly moved underground. I look into one, a crude network of dirt-paved hideaways. It's a below-the-grid lifestyle.
The tents over here, I can guarantee you they're still lived in, you know, because of the condition they're in. They're clean, look to be just more than likely used just last night.
Police are here to warn residents they'll be clearing out this camp. A homeless outreach group joins them.
We're leaving them our information so they know where we're at, where they can come eat and take a shower and get some clean clothes.
Soon we see why police are planning an eviction, squalid conditions, and a pile of diapers.
We're working to find out if in fact, they've got kids down here. Of course, this is not a safe environment for them. So,
but Cooley first came here because of a rash of crime. Police say copper thieves have repeatedly struck a nearby grain mill, most recently swiping a valuable piece of equipment, and now millions of dollars worth of grain is in danger of going bad.
Well, just a week after the anniversary of the 1989 Exxon Valdez spill that was considered one of the most devastating environmental disasters in history, the oil company is once again in the spotlight, and this one is closer to home. An ExxonMobil pipeline ruptured on Friday, leaking nearly 10,000 barrels of tar sand crude oil into a small Arkansas town. The streets flowed with black gold.
Luckily, our house is here, which is seemingly unaffected, but the smell is unbelievable. I mean, look. Incredible. And that is oil.
22 homes were evacuated when the 848-mile-long Pegasus pipeline burst. This line carries around 90,000 barrels of crude oil from Illinois to Texas every day, but that flow has temporarily stopped. And this isn't the only issue ExxonMobil is currently dealing with. Last Wednesday, a train that was reportedly transporting tar sands oil between states spilled nearly 15,000 gallons of this tar sands oil into Minnesota. What's more, Exxon was recently slapped with a $1.7 million fine for a pipeline that dumped 42,000 gallons of oil into the Yellowstone River all the way back in 2011. So this is just one company moving on slick ground and continuing that path. Now, all of this is happening just 1 week after the U.S. Senate held a symbolic vote in favor of the Keystone XL pipeline. These latest incidents are just the newest chapter in a complex narrative of America's energy future.
Thing of the day tonight is our horror show of the day, and the horror is taking place
in Mayflower, Arkansas, where people are sending home videos of the huge spill of a heavy crude from a ruptured Exxon pipeline. Now, the resident who took this footage said the smell is unbelievable. And aerial photographer Adam Randall said the reek was overwhelming even at his high altitude. After this footage was taken, you should know, the FAA forbid flying over the area, which means, my friends, either it's toxic at an extremely high height or it's just something your government does not want you to see. Oh, and here's a horror sequel. Oil Change International says this sludge in the pipeline technically counts as heavy crude, not oil. So transporting it doesn't require regular payments into our national cleanup fund, meaning less money for future disasters. It's a tax loophole, and it also applies to the tar sands running through Keystone Pipeline. Keep that in mind come election day.
Canadian crude is still causing major headaches in a small Arkansas city. More than 1 million liters of Alberta oil have spewed from a ruptured American pipeline since Friday. This spill comes at a pivotal moment for a proposed Canadian pipeline, and some are using this incident as fuel for stopping Keystone XL. Lindsay Duncombe is in Washington with the details. Lindsay.
Peter, environmentalists see this spill as a warning to the White House. Approve the Keystone XL pipeline, and there could be more spills just like it.
If you're trying to pitch pipelines as safe, this isn't the kind of public relations you want. Images of Alberta oil oozing through American suburbs. Thousands of barrels have spilled since Friday. Exxon isn't saying exactly how many.
We could see oil running down the road like a river.
Many, forced from their homes, didn't even know the pipeline was there.
Arkansas now investigating ExxonMobil for a nasty oil leak in the town of Mayflower. Crews are still cleaning up 12,000 barrels of crude oil that poured into the streets and soaked into lawns. The neighborhood is now overcome with the stench of crude oil. People were forced to evacuate from their homes, 24 of them. The spill started Friday. It was caused by a 2 to 3 inch gash in ExxonMobil's 60-year-old underground pipeline that transports Canadian oil to Texas. With us now from Little Rock is Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. What action is your office taking and why?
Well, the Attorney General's office is responsible for representing the people of the state, and so most importantly to me, I want to know what happened. I want to know what we're doing to clean it up.
It's the largest towel you can buy and can handle even the toughest jobs. Thanks ever so much, Brawny.
Anytime.
I'm sure you heard about the Exxon oil spill in Mayflower, Arkansas the other day. The original Mayflower ship explored new territory. And in a way, so is this oil spill, because it's one of the first tar sands oil spills in the U.S. And we're learning how hard it is to clean up this shit. I love learning new things, don't you? So the heads of these oil companies, I'll call them psychopathic butthole-faced greed monkeys, or PBGMs for short, make billions of dollars a year for their companies. These companies also get subsidies from the taxpayers to the tune of anywhere between $10 and $50 billion. Then, when asked to pay taxes back to the society they've pillaged, the PBGMs look at us as if we've asked them to spend a weekend bathing the homeless. According to Citizens for Tax Justice, between 2008 and 2010, ExxonMobil paid a tax rate of 0.4%. That's less taxes than Snoop Dogg paid on his medicinal marijuana stash. Then when they spill oil across a town like Mayflower, they do a great job of pretending to clean it up. With big paper towels and funny hats and hoses, they put on quite a little show. And why do I consider it a show? Because there's a deep, dark secret about oil that the PBGMs really don't want you to know. You can't clean up oil. You can't do it. Not really. Not in the real world. Not when it's mixed with water and soil and otters. It's f***ing impossible. You can clean up some of it. You can push it around a little. You can get it out of people's f***ing faces. But it ain't gonna magically subtract itself from the water and land. So what Exxon and BP do is they make it look like they're cleaning up. Just like it looks like that magician ripped the head off the bunny rabbit. Just like it looks like that guy punted that football across a f***ing highway and into a basketball hoop in that viral video that got 12,743,000 more views than this video will ever get. Did any of those things really happen? Nope. But it's all part of the show, my friends. Exxon should win an Oscar for best performance by a corporation in a dark, dark comedy. And even though they put on a show, they would prefer you don't see the spill at all. And this is why BP held the media back from the Gulf of Mexico, even going to the trouble of hiding oil-covered dolphin carcasses, which is really a specialty skill. Not many colleges even allow you to major in that anymore. It's got to be a labor of love. And Exxon has fought the media back from this new spill. They even went so far as to get the FAA to declare a no-fly zone over the spill. You know, there were only 3 other events in our history that were so gruesome the authorities wouldn't even allow planes to fly overhead. 9/11, the eviction of Occupy, and last year's Adam Sandler film, That's My Boy. But luckily, Exxon's now telling us this wasn't an oil spill. They're telling us they spilled something else called bitumen, which sounds like how Snoop Dogg would describe his weed. But no, bitumen is chemicals mixed with Canadian tar sands. It's even more toxic than oil. And the Koch brothers and TransCanada and Exxon and so many others are salivating at the idea of pumping this shit across the entire continental U.S. in the new tar sands pipeline, a.k.a. the Keystone XL, a.k.a. the nail in the coffin for climate change. A rupture from the Keystone pipeline would make this current spill look like wiping dog shit off the bottom of your shoe. Bitumen is a vicious motherfucker, and it's not going to be cleaned up by a quicker picker-upper. Wait a second, I thought we were talking about oil. How'd we get to climate change? A good person to ask about that would be NASA scientist James Hansen, who has told us for years that the tar sands contain twice the amount of carbon dioxide emitted by global oil use in our entire history. And if we fully exploit them, the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere would be truly catastrophic, killing off between 20 and 50% of the planet's species. And for those of you who think you don't care about this, it would also probably ruin your bachelor party. I hope that celebratory blow-up doll also works as a raft, because your town will likely be underwater. So what can you do about this other than protest the Keystone XL and throw things at your TV? Well, there's actions going on everywhere, every day. My friend Ed Fallon in Iowa has a cool one. He's doing a march for climate action across the entire United States. Some say marches never do anything. I point them to the Civil Rights Marches and the Vietnam War Marches and the march that Snoopy does every Thanksgiving Day down the streets of Manhattan to raise money for erectile dysfunction research. Of course, it was revealed last year that someone just forgot to inflate that part of Snoopy's body, so maybe that example isn't the best. Anyway, you can learn more about the march at climatemarch.org. And tell the Keystone Pipeline to go f*** itself before it f***s all of us.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
They don't just want you to lay in the bed you made. They want you to be a slave to the system. They want you to be an unwitting, distracted victim. They want you to work for free until you die. So essentially, they eventually want you to lay in the coffin they made and the hearse they rehearsed and the plot they got to be 6 feet. And I keep wanting to tell people not to sleep or at least try to keep one eye open because they're hoping to catch you slipping. It's like they say, the system ain't broken. It was designed to work this way. Complete with the prison industrial complex, and if you're willing to don a uniform, they figure your time best spent serving. Whether behind bars or as a public servant or working for Halliburton, either way, your symbiosis is certain to help ensure that person after person will work for free until they die. And the biggest lie is that slavery ended, and I always wondered how that was sold, because the richest and most powerful ain't never given up control. Especially since the way that most of them got to be and get to stay, the richest and most powerful is by enslaving poor souls. And lo and behold, even your idols are beholden. Even your idols are suicidal tokens, and thousands of years before Christ, spiritual identity's been being stolen. The weirdest thing about civilization is that the thieves in the temple always seem to be able to keep their pockets swollen. They assassinate a savior, rewrite their teachings, and have always sold them back to the followers, and the people feel powerless, like they don't know that love is the message or can't see what the hour is. But if love is supreme, then you can't achieve anything meaningful through cowardice. So your choice is either bravery or slavery. In a time when companies actually believe that they have runaway employees, so they chase down that seamstress and chain her to a desk, or chase down that sex worker and tie her to a mattress, or chase down that sharecropper and tie his entire family's future to the harvest, and them enemy minds assembly lines go on and on and on, and they don't stop till millions of children in the street can't see that only 1 in 25,000 will ever become a professional athlete. And since most won't learn to hustle legally, and most won't learn to earn any type of degree, they'll either be an enlisted man or a convicted man. Either way, their entire earthly soul will be controlled by Uncle Sam. And I keep praying for more and more ways to make more and more people understand that if you ever feel desperate enough to reach out for the richest and most powerful hands, they lie until they can figure out a way to make you work for free until you die.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.